case this morning, Arkell versus McCasey. Mr. Kieran.
May it please the court, I am Ryan Carrion for the petitioner Ezetula Oryakhil. Mr. Oryakhil credibly established a well-founded fear of persecution in Afghanistan by the Taliban after he traveled to the United States. He traveled to the United States when the U.S. military sent him here to take advanced English courses so that he could become a better teacher in the Afghan army. Mr. Oryakhil's asylum claim was denied because he did not seek the protection of the Afghan army. Therefore, the Board of Immigration Appeals affirmed the immigration judge's decision that Mr. Oryakhil did not show that he could not internally relocate. This holding fails for two reasons. First, it is illogical. It brushes aside Mr. Oryakhil's credible testimony and the immigration judge's own factual findings. Second, it applies an incorrect standard of law that fails to evaluate whether Mr. Oryakhil can reasonably relocate. This substantial evidence compels a finding that he cannot. Mr. Oryakhil is credible. The immigration judge found that he testified credibly and consistently throughout his proceedings. The immigration judge found his testimony to be plausible and consistent with all of the record evidence he submitted, as well as the expert testimony in the case. Therefore, the immigration judge held that he need not provide any type of corroborating evidence. His credible testimony was based on his long-time service in the Afghan army. He served in the Afghan army since the age of 8 and was an Afghan army officer for over 10 years. Based on this experience, he reached a reasonable conclusion that he could not obtain protection from the Afghan army and that he would not be safe in other places in Afghanistan. Nevertheless, the immigration judge, affirmed by the BIA, held that he ought to have sought military protection. This is not illogical and evidences at least six key missteps in the decision. First, the immigration judge explicitly credited Mr. Oryakhil's testimony that the fact of having protection in the Afghan army would cause him an increased risk of danger to him and his family. Nevertheless, she held that he should seek this protection. Second, the immigration judge explicitly credited Mr. Oryakhil's testimony that the Afghan government could not protect against the Taliban or the individuals acting it under its auspices. Furthermore, she found that the government could not curb the illegal and violent acts at the hands of the Taliban, and that therefore conditions throughout the country were chaotic and violent. Nevertheless, the immigration judge still held that Mr. Oryakhil could obtain protection, should seek protection from the Afghan government, implying that that government could provide protection after finding that the government could not protect against the Taliban. This is another contradiction in the decision. Third, the immigration judge found that Mr. Oryakhil ought to have sought help from his military commander or at least notified the commander of the threat against him. After crediting Mr. Oryakhil's testimony that this commander was in no position to provide him with protection, this is another contradiction. Fourth, the immigration judge, affirmed by the BIA, held that Mr. Oryakhil ought to have sought relocation, reassignment, or military housing all through the military. Yet the immigration judge noted that Mr. Oryakhil credibly testified that there was no housing available in Kabul from the military or countrywide, that he was not safe in Kabul or elsewhere in the country, and that he could not obtain a transfer through the military. He was no longer a combatant and was rather just a teacher in the Afghan army.
Did the United States military take any position in this case?
They did not, Your Honor.
Were they asked?
And they were not.
I thought that there was evidence before the IJ that was accepted as credible that he was in the status of a deserter. Or did that come in later?
Well, Mr. Oryakhil did, in fact, testify credibly that he was a deserter and that he was subject to 10 to 12 years of imprisonment under Afghan law for desertion.
And in fact, he had been given orders to report, apparently, just before he left and was in violation of those orders?
He did, Your Honor. What happened is when he returned, almost immediately, the incident that caused
when
him to...
From the United States?
When he returned from the United States to Afghanistan, the incident with the Taliban occurred pretty quickly thereafter. And he had reported to his commanding officer for duty and then his commanding officer told him to come back a few days later, and he did not. He was in hiding in Afghanistan for the 2 weeks between when the incident occurred and when he was able to get a flight out of Afghanistan. So he did credibly testify that he was a deserter. And as I mentioned earlier, the immigration judge did hold that he need not provide any type of corroborating evidence because of his credible testimony. However, in regards to desertion, she noted that he did not provide corroborating evidence and stated that he did not satisfy the court that he was, in fact, a deserter. My sixth point, Your Honors, is that the immigration judge did not cite sufficient or even significant country conditions evidence that the whole of Afghanistan was safe outside of Kabul or that Mr. Oryakil could obtain protection. The government did not cite or submit any evidence that Mr. Oryakil could obtain protection. However, Mr. Oryakil submitted overwhelming evidence in the form of news articles, United Nations analyses, and even State Department background material that Afghanistan countrywide was unsafe and that he could not obtain military protection. This coincides with the immigration judge's ruling that chaos and violence reigned throughout the whole of Afghanistan. In sum, Mr. Oryakil reached a reasonable conclusion that he could not obtain military protection. This conclusion was reached through his experience as a lifelong member of the Afghan army. Nevertheless, the immigration judge held, affirmed by the BIA, that he should have sought protection that not only would have placed him in a greater danger, but was not available, protection when the government could not even control the Taliban, that he should have sought help from his commander, who he credibly testified was in no position to provide him with protection, military housing that was not available in Kabul or countrywide, and that he failed to show that he was a deserter, after explicitly requiring that he need not provide any type of corroborating evidence. Finally, there is no country conditions evidence to suggest that Mr. Oryakil could obtain any sort of protection or safety throughout Afghanistan, and he submitted evidence to show that he could not. Therefore, substantial evidence compels a finding that he could not relocate safely in Afghanistan. If there are no further questions, I wish to reserve the remainder of my time for a rebuttal, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mankin.
Excuse me. Good morning, Your Honors. Jeffrey L. Mencken, United States Department of Justice for the Attorney General. Mr. Oryakil is a captain in the Afghan military who spent 6 months in Texas as part of a defense program, training program. He did not pass the program and was required to return to Afghanistan. And 2 days after his return, his father called him and said that he had been threatened by the Taliban. The very next day, Mr. Oryakil bought a plane ticket back to the United States and 2 weeks later left Afghanistan. Mr. Oryakil never told his military superiors about any threat. He never asked anyone in the Afghan military or the Afghan government or any other government that we are aware of for any assistance whatsoever. The first and only thing he did when he felt threatened was to buy a plane ticket. By regulation, Mr. Oryakil bore the burden of establishing that he cannot safely relocate in Afghanistan or that it would be unreasonable for him to do so, and that burden never shifted. The government was not required to submit any evidence that he could relocate. The Board of Immigration Appeals found that Mr. Oryakil did not meet his burden, and no record evidence compels a contrary conclusion. Rather, the record shows that Mr. Oryakil deliberately chose not to seek relocation assistance or other protection as a member of the Afghan military.
The problem here, counsel, is that there seems to be a disconnect between the IJ's findings and conclusions on persecution, in which she accepted everything the petitioner said and everything his experts said about conditions in Afghanistan and his own personal situation as having satisfied that first level of inquiry, and then didn't rely on anything new or different to sustain the finding that he hadn't carried his burden about relocation and demonstrating that relocation within the country would be unreasonable. And there's sort of a disconnect between those two things, having accepted everything he said about the chaotic and dangerous conditions in Afghanistan for himself personally based on what occurred, and also in general for those who are in the military and associated with the United States government and the U.S. military?
Well, I would disagree with the characterization respectfully, Your Honor, as to a disconnect. What the immigration judge found was that conditions were dangerous nationwide, but they're dangerous for everyone in Afghanistan. The immigration judge did find that Mr. Arayakil could not be protected within Kabul, but there was no finding that the military was incapable of doing anything. That's the problem here, is that there's a complete failure of proof. We can speculate as to what could have been done to protect him, but we don't know because there is a complete failure of proof. And the burden being on Mr. Arayakil means that he did not meet his burden of proof. Now,
the IJ did accept his testimony that he was in the status of a deserter from the Afghan military. So that's part of the disconnect that I see in this record, to base the asylum denial on the premise that he can relocate safely in Afghanistan by going back to the military, when she accepted that he was a deserter, seems to me to not hold together.
My recollection of the IJ's finding on that is different, and
But I may have it wrong. That's why I'm asking. What specifically did she find with respect to that?
Well, I can say that there's no evidence in the record that charges had been filed against Mr. Arayakil. There's no finding that he would be imprisoned. And there's a fundamental problem here, and that is that Mr. Arayakil is now trying to excuse himself from the burden of seeking relocation by saying, I can't go back, I can't be protected now because I'm a deserter. Well, he created that situation. And there is a fundamental issue that he's basically claiming a benefit to put himself in a beneficial position over the ordinary Afghan citizen who might be threatened in Afghanistan. As I said, he made his bed, for lack of a better term. And there are many, if you want to call it unclean hands, if you want to call it fugitive disentitlement, there are issues here along that line. But it doesn't mitigate his failure of proof. And for him to just simply declare, I'm going to prison, they won't help me. Well, how do we know they won't help him? He never inquired, and he had that obligation. Mr. Arayakil holds a privileged position here in that the average Afghan citizen would not have the resources available to him or her in this situation. He was a captain in the Afghan military, and he did have an obligation, I wouldn't say necessarily heightened, but this is a circumstance of his case, and we do have to examine the individual circumstances. Now, as I said, he's not absolved of that because he did something which might make him be seen in a disadvantaged light.
He was in the United States at the behest of the United States government, the United States military, and attended a 6-week course. He gets back, and because he did that, now he's subject to the Taliban retaliation, right?
And fine, and he could have brought that to the attention of his superiors that he had been threatened. And he did not. And he did not based on his own assumption, well, there's nothing they can do. Now, he's not been offered as an expert on Afghan military deployment. He never asked the question. If he was sent to the United States at the behest or under the protection of the United States, then he could have sought protection of the United States. And for him to just say, my commanding general can't do anything for me, is unacceptable, and it's insufficient for the burden here to say that we're talking about a member of a military of a sovereign nation saying, I feel threatened by an insurgency, I'm entitled to come to the United States. Well, there's thousands of troops over in Afghanistan, both NATO and United States men and women, who don't have that option. And he does have an obligation to at least seek protection in his own country as a member of that country's military before he comes here and says, protect me.
Didn't he purchase his plane ticket and subsequently talk to his commander?
He immediately bought a ticket the day after he felt threatened. Several days after that, he had I don't know if it was a scheduled meeting, but he did meet with his commanding general and never brought it up. He remained in Afghanistan for several more weeks, whether in hiding or not, although he did return to his family home at one point, and was allowed to leave the Afghanistan without any trouble. So this all shows that there were opportunities to him. This is not an onerous burden we're talking about here. If he had gone to his general and his general said, "No, you are really out of luck, you better get out of here," then we would have a different case. But we don't know what his general would have said because he never asked the simple question. He never fulfilled his obligation, and we quote the 11th Circuit quote there, that it's not unreasonable to require a refugee to make inquiries, I'm paraphrasing, but he has an obligation before he comes here, and he did not fulfill that.
Is it fair to say then, in response to my earlier question, that the IJ rejected that portion of his testimony?
Well, I think the immigration judge found that he had a credible fear, but I don't know that that means that everything else that Mr. Arayal said happened, it has to be taken as gospel. So it's a long way of saying I think yes.
But we don't really have an explicit finding on that one way or another. But
well, he can accept, the immigration judge can accept the testimony without finding it persuasive. And I think ultimately that was done here. It was very clear throughout the immigration judge's opinion and throughout the hearing itself that she was very troubled by Mr. Arayakil's failure as a member of the military to seek protection of the military.
But if she accepts the testimony, what else is she relying on to reach the opposite conclusion?
It's a failure of proof, Your Honor. It's a failure of him, Mr. Arayakil, to show that he could not safely relocate or that it would be unreasonable for him to do so. And he took no steps. He decided to take no steps. He did not investigate. It's funny. He's being posed as an expert on the Afghan military, but he never did. He made no investigation as to what was available to him, either individually, personally, or by going to his superiors and saying, "I am in trouble." The fact that members of the Afghan military are being killed in an insurgency, as are civilians, as are troops from NATO and the United States, is not to say that he gets a privileged position and is absolved from his responsibility to seek an alternative before he turns here. And he didn't do that. He didn't go to his commander. He went basically to his travel agent. And he doesn't get to do that under the regulations.
So the favorable credibility finding of the IJ extended only to the evidence of credible fear of persecution. And
I believe so, and we see all the time somebody can be credible and not meet their burden of proof. And the burden of proof for asylum always, at all times, is on the applicant. And on this issue, it is at all times on the applicant. And he completely washed his hands of his responsibility here. And we are left to speculate because he did so.
What about the motion to reopen?
The motion to reopen, Your Honor, I think we addressed in our brief, but
it's untimely initially.
Pardon me?
It was untimely, at least initially.
I think it's admitted that it was untimely, that the question then becomes whether changed circumstances were shown, and I don't think the board abused its discretion in finding that they were not. The most that was demonstrated was that the threat that had been made to Mr. Arayakil continued, and a continued threat is not changed circumstances. Otherwise, there would never, ever be an end to the number of times someone who files an untimely motion could continue to file untimely motions. Nor does it address the question of relocation, whether he could safely relocate anywhere within his country. Also, I would submit, and I think it's clear, that it doesn't even show that he is a deserter. What is loosely deemed an arrest warrant is not. It's an inquiry saying Mr. Arayakil, and the writer apparently is not even aware that Mr. Arayakil had gone back to Afghanistan because it says that he went to the U.S. for education and had not returned. So they're and it does say if he doesn't, if we do not receive information as to where he is, steps may be taken, but it doesn't say that they have been. And as we say in our brief, the fact that he may be subject to prosecution if he did desert his post is not grounds for asylum in the United States. It's a legitimate prosecution. You don't get protection here from that. Your Honors, unless there are any other questions, I'd be happy to address any other points.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I would just submit that the record evidence supports the Board's determination that Mr. Arayakil did not show that he could not safely relocate or that it would be unreasonable for him to do so, and we would ask the Court to affirm the decision below and dismiss. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Maker. How much time? Sorry? 6 minutes.
Your Honors, the respondent correctly points out that it is Mr. Arayakil's burden to show that relocation is not reasonable within Afghanistan. And as I described to you earlier, significant portions of his credible testimony do in fact show that he cannot relocate through the military, which was the basis of the IJ's holding. Now, it's very explicit within the immigration judge's decision that the entirety of his testimony is credible and consistent, and that he need not provide any corroborating evidence. Your Honors can locate that on the short appendix, page 4 and 5, as to credibility, and page 17 with regard to corroborating evidence.
Well, the government argues, though, that there's a limit to that credibility finding. It was a positive credibility finding, but the IJ made it clear that credible evidence was persuasive on persecution but not on relocation.
Your Honor.
And isn't the IJ entitled to split the case that way?
The IJ is certainly entitled to decide which portions of the testimony are persuasive and which parts are not. However, here the IJ never stated that she didn't find particular parts of his testimony persuasive. And the IJ is not entitled to find his entire testimony credible and then disregard or ignore portions of that testimony to suit the decision. And therein lies why this decision is illogical, because she explicitly credits all these points of testimony and then does not later state, well, they're not persuasive. She, in a sense, just discounts and disregards them. Now, Your Honor, another issue here is the characterization of the standard that Mr. Arayakil was required to meet. And the respondent mentioned the 11th Circuit case, and I believe he's referring to Mazariagos, which is an 11th Circuit case that was decided in 2001. Now, reliance on this case is ill-advised because the 11th Circuit in Arboleda, a 2006 case, found that the same circuit in Mazariagos 5 years earlier did not properly apply the regulation. Now, the Arboleda court stated that the regulation required, and this was confirmed in this court in Das against Gonzalez, that the regulation requires two things. One, that a petitioner can safely relocate from the persecution, and second, that a petitioner may reasonably relocate from relocate within Afghanistan. Now, in this case, both the immigration judge's decision and the respondent's argument are squarely limited to whether Mr. Arayakil may safely relocate, that is, whether he can avoid the persecutive threat that the immigration judge found to exist in Kabul. Now, the immigration judge discounts anything else, any of the reasonableness factors under the regulation, because she stated that he faces a significant natural threat of harm by remaining in the military, but that threat is not persecutive in nature. Now, if we come back to Arboleda and what the regulation requires, this two-pronged test, it's clear, and that court states as much, that the reasonableness factors need not be persecutive in nature in order to preclude reasonable relocation. In fact, countrywide persecution need not exist for relocation to be unreasonable. Now, we have cited a number of cases in Mr. Arayakil's initial brief, among them Knezovic and Gambashidze, which show that these factors need not be persecutive in nature. And Knezovic involved petitioners from Bosnia, and the court in that case found that it was not only unreasonable but exceptionally harsh to require petitioners to relocate away where they had no connections, no family, no job, no housing, in a country with what they characterized as abysmal country conditions. The facts in this case are very similar. Among other factors in the reasonableness inquiry, there are two factors that play into Mr. Oryakil's case: ongoing civil strife and social and cultural constraints. Now, the immigration judge did find that conditions in Afghanistan were chaotic and violent. That certainly qualifies as ongoing civil strife. And as the immigration judge found, Mr. Oryakil is no normal individual in Afghanistan. He's a longtime member of the Afghan military. The record shows that at points he had spied on the Taliban. He's been to the United States. He's certainly going to be especially susceptible to the kinds of harms that are currently pervading Afghanistan. But in addition to that, Afghanistan culture does not allow for the concept of an individual. Afghan members live with their immediate families, and single men living alone or who attempt to live alone are viewed especially suspiciously. Now, this falls clearly within the social and cultural constraint prong, and in fact, the expert witness in this case testified that Mr. Oryakil might not even be able to find housing because there's not usually housing available for single men. Now, Mr. Oryakil did not make an assumption that he could not relocate. He made a reasonable conclusion that he could not relocate or obtain the help of the military. He did that based on his experience with the Afghan army, regardless of whether we characterize him as an expert or not. The man was in the army since the age of 8, his entire lifetime. And to suggest that he did not have an understanding of the military or the options available to him, I believe is, a mischaracterization. Finally, Your Honors, I just would like to point out, you asked me earlier, Judge Kaney, about whether the military became involved in this case at any point, and I failed to tell you, and I believe that this is in the motion to expedite, that he did cooperate with the Defense Intelligence Agency while he remained in detention to provide them with intelligence on Afghanistan. I see my time is nearing an end, Your Honors. Mr. Oryakil clearly could not safely or reasonably relocate within Afghanistan. His credible testimony demonstrates that. The immigration judge held he need not provide corroborating evidence, yet disregarded portions of his testimony, which she was not allowed to do. Substantial evidence compels a finding that he could not safely or reasonably relocate. And for these reasons, we respectfully ask the court to vacate the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals and reverse the case, remand with an instruction that the Attorney General grant asylum or withholding of removal. Thank you, Your Honors.
He acted pro se at the hearing, or was he represented?
He was initially pro se at some stages of the master calendar hearing, Your Honor, but then he did become represented by us and was represented by us during the merits hearing.
The immigration judge's order doesn't reflect that.
That he was represented? No, it's not specifically in the order, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.